All of the views and opinions expressed here are those of the individual speaking and may not be representative of Coding American. At times, language may be considered vulgar. Listener discretion is suggested.
What's going on? Welcome to another episode of the Wheel Wednesday Behind the Wheel podcast. I'm Scott. This is Luis.
How you doing, guys?
You've seen us before. We've done this before. Anyhow, look, really good podcast this time. I hope so. Anyway, I don't know because I've never met our guest yet.
Yeah.
But I think I have high hopes, and I'll tell you why. Because I think that if I could imagine being in the spot that our guest was in this past weekend, I feel like a lot of things and a lot of emotions, in addition to really having a great performance, will just be there, you know?
Well, and I was actually mentioning this to him while we were catching up a little bit. It's like the thing I love about the sport, which we're talking about Formula Drift, is when someone like him comes into the playing field and stirs up the pot. And it's the funnest thing to watch, to have it happen the way that it does, because you get it once in a blue, you know what I mean? Where it's like, you see, like, you just see a star coming up, you know? And I feel like this is one of those people that, to, you know, stirred up the pot in the pro.
Well, look, I mean, I don't know that I would use the stirred up the pot thing, because I think, and here's why, because it would stir up the pot almost imply, to me, it almost implies that there's this level of, we didn't expect it.
True, right?
And I guess what I would look at is, you know, as you watch some of these drivers graduate to different parts of the series, and now, you know, our guest has put himself into, you know, arguably the highest form of drifting in the world.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And now has basically said, coming out of the gate, hey, look.
Yep, I'm here.
Yeah.
I'm here.
Right. All right, let's do it.
Well, before we bring our guests in, just make sure to like and subscribe, because if you're here, might as well do it already, right? Anyways, without further ado, we're going to bring in the M-Spec Duke himself.
Whoa. Oh, no.
That's what they call him. Yeah, that's what Jared called him.
Okay. Yeah.
Dan Stukey. Woo! There he is.
What's hey. Up? What's up, man? How you guys doing?
So question, do you like that nickname, the Duke of M-Spec? Man.
I don't know if I'm a huge fan of that one, Jared. I got a weird name. It doesn't rhyme with anything good. He usually comes up with some decent stuff for people, but four years he's been trying different ones, and I don't know. We'll see what sticks.
We're gonna have to work on. We'll work on a better one for you, man. Right?
I like the Stooks of Hazard.
That's a good one. That's a good one.
You know, you should maybe next year the livery, right? We'll just, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
That, because Jared won't have a choice. He'll have to use it.
Well, so question, just because, you know, random. What are some nicknames that you've had?
No.
I've had nicknames. So is there a nickname that you have? What do people call you when they're your homie?
Casey usually calls me some pretty mean stuff. honestly, Stooky.
Stooky, yeah, I like it.
It's like such a common mispronunciation that people call it Stook, to where even people who know I'm Stooky still call me Stook. Yeah. So even, I guess Stook's a nickname, but Daniel Stooky, whatever you want to call me.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's better than like something like Little Pistol Starter. Or, you know what I mean? Like, you ever see that movie, right? The Kings of Comedy? He's like, I can't call another man delicious.
Or I Love You Man, where he's like, you got it, Jobin.
Yeah, right. Yeah. So listen, right, man, I'm super pumped for people that maybe aren't familiar with you yet. You did pro spec last year, and I like to use the term graduated at this stage. I think that at some point pro spec will not be a graduation; it will be a lateral type thing. I just don't think we're there yet. So you graduated to FD Pro, and I think a lot of people will make the argument, and you can comment on it, if you are a drifter and if you are a professional drifter and you're making the climb through your career, the pinnacle in that career and the hopefully is achieving Pro 1, you know, pro.
Yeah. I think, honestly, when we started Pro Am, that was kind of our goal. We see these guys, and you know, I still kind of see them. They're all like superheroes, like Field and Odie and Forrest Wang, and all these dudes are just way up here. So I mean, it is, that's a cool goal. It is a good thing to like strive for, and you know,
how does it feel coming off of? See, I look at it from a totally different place. Like I'm not a drifter. I'm not like, you know what I mean. Like I followed the sport for, you know, since it's been here, right? Like, you know, I was at the first Nopi Drifts, and I was at, you know, some of the first FD events, and it's been awesome, you know, knowing a lot of these drivers and being involved in some capacity since the beginning. But I'm not a drifter, right? But like I look at Long Beach, and there's certain events on the FD schedule that to me are like, you know, the holy grails, the halos, the things that you think about. And I think, you know, Long Beach obviously is one of them, but it's also a super technical course. So how did it feel, one, getting there, and two, walking away with such a great performance?
Just getting there in general was unreal. Like me and Casey, and I did a bunch of laps with Josh Love too. We play there on the sim all the time.
Right.
And it, you know, like I watch it on TV, I see it on the sim. So it's always been this like really crazy digital place. I've never been there as a spectator or anything. Yeah. So showing up and seeing the whole city has, you know, these racetrack barricades down it when you're going out to eat and stuff. You're like driving, right? It's super wild. Seeing the stands full of people was nuts. That's something, I don't know, pretty new to me. I guess pro spec or doesn't really pull that kind of audience on the earlier in the days or whatever, but no, that like it was wild. It literally didn't sink in until I was on my way home and kind of going through the media from the weekend. And then I was like, oh shit, I drove Long Beach, that was really cool.
You know, so you mentioned about the simulator. And again, I'm going to go back to the technicality of that course. And so I'm going to explain a little bit. And if you want to elaborate, because you actually, you know, then that's great. But like, people don't understand that. Remember, like they take parking lots and streets and, you know, all these different surfaces that are not intended to be a racetrack, and they turn them into what we know as FD Long Beach, right?
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of transitions there. The wall is terribly there. And when you are even close, it has this tendency to suck people in. It's been known for having some really devastating crashes.
Yeah.
So
especially this. Yeah.
Yeah. Right. So like how is that? Like you came from sim. Do you feel that the simulator helped you at least with line and maybe some of the things, or is just the nature of being there and doing it in person just completely a reset?
No, the sim definitely, it helps a ton, but only to a certain extent.
Yeah.
The timing of the run up, the, you know, finding your visual cues of where you should be looking and stuff. It's nice to have those going into Long Beach, but then it doesn't prepare you for like the tire marbles and stuff. I think that's why when you get deep in all those outer zones on the wall, that's why it kind of turns into ice. And I think that maybe that's what happened to Literal, and I know it happened to me in one of my follows, is when you're out where you should be, you have all this grip, and then it all collects at the bottom of the wall. So once your tires kind of hit that, it'll either, you know, set you back into the wall, or just, you know, like you're on ice, add a bunch of angle to the car. So the sim doesn't really prepare you for stuff like that. And you, that can be said for like any track, like Irwindale or anything with a big bank or something. You don't really get the grip changes in the shadowy areas and all that kind of stuff. But as far as just timing and, you know, I know I got to hang out this way, I know I got to hang out this way for this long. And it played a major role in it for sure.
So I want to get down to the nitty gritty, because we were just talking about it before. Like, the triple three times that they went out with each other. To me, honestly, look, Rome Charpetier. Did I say that right? Charpetier?
Yeah, I believe so.
He, you know, they say it different ways as well, you know. But anyways, he's sick. You know what I mean? I kind of went into watching it like, okay, you know, not really sure what the outcome would have been. Obviously, my man performed amazingly. To me, personally, I even said this to Stuke, and this is not, has nothing to do to offend anybody here. I thought he took the second round. That's me personally. This is me judging from my own eyeballs. You know what I mean? When I saw that, I think that a lot of things played a factor. But at the end of the day, it happened. But I want to know how you felt. How did you feel that you did? And if you feel it? Because I know you guys are friends. I saw you guys were giving each other pounds. Yeah, so at the end of the day, it's all a sport. But, you know, we're here to win, right?
Right. I think, yeah, Rome's got to be probably the nicest guy in FD. Like, we did Pro-Am together. And then we did our first year of back when it was Pro 2. Together, and then he moved up, and since then I've been waiting. I was like, man, we're gonna drive again. Yeah. I'll make it up there, and we're gonna drive again. But as far as the battle goes, I don't know if I slowed down out of the zone. I kind of went back, and I forget it. Like, as soon as I'm across the finish line, I forget what happened the last lap, so I have to go back and watch my in-car footage and stuff. And I definitely kind of let off throttle through the outer zone just to drop the RPMs to get a little more grip, because I thought I was going into the wall. And I definitely went back to like neutral acceleration. I don't know if it was a decel, but I didn't feel him hit me. I didn't know he hit me. And it wasn't until I crossed the finish line that I didn't hear that crazy V8. So, you know, coming around the inner clip, I was like, it's awfully quiet around here. And then once I crossed the finish line, I was like, oh shit, he spun. So I didn't know what happened at all. But yeah, I think all the one more times, if it was in one way or the other, I don't know. I think the crowd was loving it, so I think that would be the bias, if anything. They wanted it one more time just because it was making people stoked, yeah. I guess.
Yeah. It was an interesting to watch, though, because like you there were a lot of those shakeups. I mean, obviously people are talking the most probably about the literal Hurst yeah. mix up. But I think, you know, when you look at the room that you have to play with there, and mm-hmm. you look at the fact that the course is, you know, it, like you mentioned about the marbles and stuff like that, but you also have this weird thing that, like, on any racetrack, you know, your settings may change a little bit as the day goes on, and the more grip and more tire that we put down on the track, it's going to change things. So you have this ever-changing animal, you know, that's happening, and everybody's trying to adjust for it kind of on the fly. And then you kind of put some of those weird things in there, and you know, you're trying to be aggressive and you're trying to do these snaps, and I just think it was just a perfect storm in the Hurst thing, and I don't know that I feel that wasn't similar to what you guys ran into, you know?
Right. I think with that, it was I know Ryan made a post about it. I can't remember what exactly he said, but I really think it was either if you stay too deep in outer one or if you just get deep where you need to be. It goes from, you know, an inch of rubber laid down back to normal asphalt or tire rubble or whatever. So it definitely looked like, you know, it wasn't anything intentional. It's not, I don't think he dumped in a bunch of angle to mess Hurst up or anything. And Hurst just seemed to be in the wrong place at the wrong time. I told him, we were all at the bar afterwards, I think. And I was like, man, like if I was in that situation, like sucks to suck, but I wouldn't put myself into the wall. I'd, you know, if I'm there and he transitions into me, I'd, you know, breaking a back right suspension on literal and breaking a front left suspension on your car from hitting in transition is so much better than slamming into a wall and, you know, potentially hurting yourself, potentially ruining the whole car. So I was like, man, I would have drove through it and then apologized for hitting him or something. But it's a bummer to see for sure.
Yeah, it's hard, you know, and it's so much like even like when you guys do your runs, there's so like the way you kind of almost like have that blackout experience. There's so much muscle memory that happens from all your years of driving that like I don't know that Jonathan had a conscious choice in which way he reacted, you know?
Right. He was where he needed to be.
Right.
It's hard to you know, see all the things that are changing in Ryan's car while you're paying attention to your car. I don't know. It's tough. Sometimes those things just happen.
Yeah. So how has it been? There's a lot of big things that happen when you make the jump from pro spec to pro, right? You have double the events, you have double the cost, double the tire usage, double, you know, the wear and tear on the car and maintenance. Now I would say you guys are pretty lucky. M spec is known, especially around, you know, the road race community. We have some shared personalities in the M spec group.
Savannah and all them.
So how has that really changed your game plan about how you're going to run this season, maybe compared to last season?
That's a good question. Honestly, I don't know. We kind of Casey can keep a car together. The last motor that was in the car was in there for 3 years, I think, or a little over 2 years. And that was a four-season round of FD, but then we also had grid lives and fun days right. and festival and stuff. So if you take those out, it's kind of on the same level of the wear and tear on the car. The budget in tires and stuff definitely goes up, but yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it's just going to be interesting, too, because another dynamic that maybe doesn't have directly to do with you, but does, is the fact that Casey's going to run Prospect this year himself.
Yep. Yeah. So Casey's always been keeping me on track, and Matt Zabracki as well. He's our crew chief.
Right.
And I think we've gotten to the point where he can set the car up well enough, and we got our motor from Rad Dan this year, and his motors seem to always be working fine. So you know, I'm knocking on wood here, but I think the car shouldn't have any major mechanical issues to where anything that should be needed to be fixed or changed or repaired or whatever is usually just suspension or like somewhat mechanical stuff, which shouldn't interfere with his practice time and, you know, his stuff too. So I think we'll be all right, because we've done a lot of events together as a two-car team and even a three-car team at like Grid Life and stuff with David Mesker. To where, you know, we have the trailer set up to where we know how to run two cars. We know, you know, we made cool new tire carts to where we each have our own tire car, and we've been preparing for this. So it will be a lot. The travel will be a lot. Plus we're fitting a wedding in between, this round, next round. So, it's a lot of work, but yeah, Casey and Matt kill it. And
he's getting married at the end of this month. Wait, April 30th.
Then you're getting married.
Oh, we lost him. Oh, there he's back. He's back.
Had like rainbow bars on my screen for a while.
Listen, we love rainbow bars.
You know, but no, I mean? Yeah. Like, he's getting married April 30th.
Congratulations. Yep.
Thank you. Yeah, thank you.
Man.
My man just went from shredded LB to getting married, committing, you know?
Yeah.
That's committing in both ends.
Realizes how ridiculous this is.
How many years you got been together?
Like a little over two now.
Okay. Yeah, listen, it's an interesting project that comes with a lot of different scenarios. So, right. You know,
let's just
enjoy it.
Let's just hope, Dan, that my girlfriend doesn't watch this, because she's constantly asking me for a ring, and I need to get on it, because, you know, she's going to be like, well, Dan did it. What about you, bro?
Well, if just in case Emily is watching, Emily, I'm...
Oh, it's Kiki. Emily is Casey's wife.
No, he's talking about my girlfriend's Emily.
And I was going to say, in case she's watching, you know, look, I'm very supportive into you getting a ring. So, you know, hey, listen. But that's wild. So your wedding's at the end of this month. Yep. And let's see. The next event is
Atlanta.
Atlanta.
Yeah.
That's in May, too. That's in... What's the date?
Well, I think
like May 6th and 7th or 7th and 8th.
Jeez Louise.
Yeah.
This guy's
so honeymoon
go
is talk, postponed,
and his
right?
tux, he's going to go freaking shred.
Yeah, I mean, we're trying to go to a couple places that I think are still locked down with COVID travel and stuff. So
yeah, what is it?
We're just kind of putting that on hold till the end of the season, or maybe we'll go on a cruise to Alaska or something. We haven't decided.
So.
Yeah, that's dope. So then you drove Atlanta last year.
No, I haven't driven Atlanta since the first year of Pro 2 when it was Pro 2.
Okay.
Yeah,
so at least you have a little bit of experience on the downhill.
Ooh, I don't even know if I'd say that. It was when we first, it was our second event in the new car, and we were dry sump, sequential. We Casey built the car to be a Pro 1 car that we tuned down a little bit through Pro Spec. And it was a lot adapting to all those things in Atlanta and stuff like that. And then it was also raining. So I actually, on my sight lap, I think I have the record for sending it deepest into the rocks or into the kiddie lip. So, no, I'm excited to get back there this year and hopefully redeem myself. I have a rock taped to my trans tunnel from Atlanta. I think that was 3 years ago now, because every time we take the car apart or you pull a piece off, somehow those rocks just accumulated and they get stuck in the car, and you'll always find one in the weirdest little spot. So I think I found the last one. So I taped it to the trans tunnel, and I'm going to take it out and I'm going to put it back in the
nice.
And I hopefully get my good juju back.
Well, nice. I'm hoping that you're able to put the rock back from the track, and you don't have to go into the rock pit to put it back.
Yeah, right. I'll do it on the track walk, so I don't plan on going in there too much.
So this is, you know, and this is one of my favorite parts about doing this, because we recently just had Human on, and he told me his story about how he got to where he, you know, how to get on, you know, on the track. I wanted to ask you, how did you, being from Minnesota, get yourself to get into the drifting life?
So it was kind of weird. I was actually never super into cars or anything. I you know, I liked cars, but I definitely was never like a drifter. I moved from Minnesota to Colorado in like 2014, I think. Mm-hmm. I'm horrible with years, but I moved there to snowboard, and I lived up in the mountains, and I was just kind of, I was always into like the action sports kind of stuff. And nice. I ended up renting a room out to this kid who volunteered at the local Drift Colorado stuff way back in the day. And he was like, man, like, you love it. I had a Subaru, and I'd slide my Subaru around in the snow, and they have the DCCD or whatever. So I'd put it at like 80% rear wheel and do donuts and whatnot. He'd be like, dude, you'd love it. This is a whole sport. So I went with him, and he let me sling around his little, I think it was a single cam S13. And I had no idea what I was doing, but I went and stole deads with him out of a Big O tire and, you know, 80 PSI, and just made a fool of myself a couple times. And I was like, this is cool. So after that, I think the first car I bought was a 1J Mark III Supra.
Oh, wow. Mm. All right.
It's the sickest thing in the world, because I've never had like I never had a real drift car. So it was just a torquey little light thing that would blow the tires off. And I'd go to IMI, which is a local Colorado track, by myself. And I'd bring a couple homies with me, and we would just do solo laps all day long. And then met some more people. And I think I bought Ethan Hunter's 350Z for my first competition or something like that. And
yeah,
got into it. Yeah.
That's wild. So now we can make the correlation. So the sim came after this whole thing. This was this a full on purchase of a sim to get more seat time?
Yeah, I think I got it in between Pro-Am and Pro Spec or Pro 2 at the time, or maybe I got it my first year of Pro 2. But I just wanted it because it was fun. It wasn't even, I mean, it was for practice or whatever, but it was just because it's a cool toy and it's super fun to do. And my cousin built me a computer and gave it to me for my birthday. So I got a little, the Club Sport 2.5 setup or something like that.
That's awesome.
Dude, that thing is unreal how much it can improve your driving. Even like Casey spent a whole bunch of time on it. He didn't drive for, I don't know, a year and a half or something like that. And then he'd sim with me every day, and we'd sim at the shop because they were set up right next to each other. And he just came out and destroyed it. The muscle memory and like the visual cues of where you should be looking on people's cars and stuff is very beneficial.
It's so dope. Like, I want to build one. I've been talking about building one of this. He's setup been for talking like over about a year, but it's like, so I'm not a drift guy, but I'm a car guy, right? And so I want to do it, but like I can't just get the like the cheap Logitech stuff. Like, I feel like if I don't have enough feel, and you know, at least, you know, Fanatec gives you some of that. I feel like I'm not going to be into it enough that I'm going to want to keep doing it.
You know what we gotta do? We gotta go visit Savannah, where she has the little community, the little community one that she has at Pikes Peak.
Sick! Oh, they do have one down there.
Yeah, he's got it in the garage.
They have it for everybody to use. It's a community one.
Right. No, I think the best way to get into it is, I think Fanatec has a little direct drive one.
Yeah,
now.
That DD like, thing. Yeah.
Yeah, like $500.
Yeah.
I've only done a couple laps on it. It wasn't enough to like get used to it or anything, but those things are pretty sick. And we started originally with some crazy 3-monitor setup, and then after we moved, I didn't want to drill into my new walls, so I just switched to a VR, which I think the Oculuses are like $250, or you can buy a used one or whatever. So
it's crazy.
Buy the cheapest nice wheel you can, because I see people struggle on the Logitech stuff quite a bit.
Yeah,
but yeah, honestly, some Fanatec stuff and a VR headset and good to go.
I want it so bad, though. Like, I have this need. You know, see, you came from Minnesota, like, and even now you're in Colorado.
He's in Oklahoma now.
Oklahoma.
Yeah, yeah,
you're in Oklahoma?
We're all over the place. We were in Denver for a while. I lived in the mountains and in Denver for 8 years.
What part of Colorado? Just curious.
So I lived in Evergreen for a year, which is like the foothills of the mountains. And then Keystone, Colorado, up by all the ski resorts. I lived there for 7 years, something like that.
The reason I ask is, it's random, but my girlfriend's from, do you know Carbondale, Like, yeah, we go to visit over there. Yeah, we would go like to Copper and all you know, up that area, going towards like Aspen and stuff like that.
So. Yeah, that's where we'd go rip the cannon.
Yeah. Nice. Yeah, but anyways, go ahead. So how did you end up in Oklahoma?
We were in Denver, and Casey and I owned MSpec Performance, right. And we would do customer stuff, and the rent just got ridiculous, and Denver was definitely, you know, rent's going this way, and Denver's going that way. And right. Our stuff was getting broken into all the time and stolen, and, you know, you got to deal with the bums living on the streets, which some of them are cool, and some of them will just, no matter how good you lock your place up, they'll still cut through the fence or break into your trailer. Yeah. They ripped all the wires out of one of my trailers. And all right, done. Oklahoma's cheap. We had some friends move down here. Josh Love and Wes Moya, some other drifters, moved down here to start a business. And we came down to visit. And we were like, dude, the weather is awesome. The, you know, the houses are cheap. The shop space is cheap. They got cool gun laws, so you can still go, you know, shoot stuff. And
yeah,
we're 3 hours from Dallas. So if you want to go do some cool city stuff, it's just a nice day cruise, and we're loving it down here.
That's awesome.
Yeah, Casey was telling me the same thing, but I was gonna say, because in Carbondale, it's totally random, but like literally the smallest house over there is up in the millions now. All of a sudden it's like crazy, because I'm assuming it's a popular spot, so everybody's moving over there and stuff, so I can understand why you guys went down there. And
I have a house in Keystone I bought right when I moved there, and it is like, I think, almost tripled now.
Yeah.
And so I rent that out, but I'm like, this summer is the summer. I got to do it in between a wedding and FD and grid lives and stuff. Somewhere I got to sell a house too. But
I guess if you're going to sell a house, it seems to be like the time. So
yeah, right. For real, especially in Colorado. Yeah.
Yeah. And like getting married and running a program, I'm sure that the extra money doesn't hurt.
Oh, yeah.
Definitely.
So are there any things or any people that, like, I mean, obviously the drift community is as big as it is, it's pretty small too. So, but like, is there anybody that just getting to sort of have practice runs with or compete with or whatever that was kind of like, this is pretty crazy?
Yeah, honestly, I didn't get a lot of practice runs with some of the people that I like really look up to. There was a couple, but like being on track and even just sitting next to line and Matt Field.
Right.
Like, it just crazy. He came out and helped us set up the S14 when we originally set it up and gave me some pointers and stuff. And him, Forrest, and James Dean are my top three drivers of all time. So unfortunately only one of them is in FD at the moment, but still, it's crazy. And like Rad Dan being next to him in line and and even like Josh Love getting to, I helped him strap down his car on the first open trailer he ever had when he started drifting and stuff. And now both of us going into Pro One together and being able to still drive, it makes it kind of, it brings Pro One down a level. I mean, that kind of sounds bad, but I mean, it's not intimidating for me when I can go out there and still have the homies that I've been driving with versus like, you know, who was it? Love got, Novak got Odie. Yeah. Mike Power got Matt Field right away.
Right.
So, hey, welcome to Pro One. Good luck. And like, you know, I got to drive with my homies, and then Rome is still a super hard battle, but it's someone that I've driven with for years. So it was nice to be able to kind of have that nice transition into it, and not just be like, here's the Sharks.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's like, you know, you watch almost like different classes, you know, kind of move up to FD Pro, and there's 100%. Always those group of guys. But it's, you know, it's funny. It's like, I think working with so many different drivers over so many years, I mean, there's so many people that I look at, like, and I'm kind of amazed by just their raw driving ability and kind of what they bring to the sport. And then you realize, though, that, like, relationships in this thing are everything. And, you know, you see it time and time again, whether it be, you know, Reeder and Hughes, when Hughes basically put his car into the wall at Irwindale, and, you know, and Travis sacrificed everything on his car to get Dylan put back into action so that Dylan could potentially go and beat him for the championship that year. Like, these are the things that you realize, that the people are so much more important than the sport. And that's what moves the sport forward.
Right. Yeah. No, it's crazy. We're all we're all kind of in this traveling circus and we're all stretching ourselves way too thin and, you know, working way too hard. So it's cool that everyone kind of gets a, everyone has a respect for everyone else just based on the fact that they're like, damn, this is tough.
Yeah. Well, it's even you guys, when you guys were running and seeing you guys get out of the car and seeing you and Rome just be excited for each other. Like, it wasn't like no animosity. I'm sitting there like, come on, man. Like, you know, but then they get out the car and they're like, yo, that was sick. And then they have to do another run. You guys, you literally are excited, the both of you. So to me, that just makes everything even better because it wants me, you know, that's why the whole crowd was cheering when you guys would kept running, you know?
Right. No, I love it. There's a couple mindsets that you can have to get you to like the top of the podium, I suppose. And one of those is a competitive, I'm here to be the best. I'm here to beat people. And I think that's kind of why I sucked my first couple years in Pro 2 and Pro Spec was because I was trying to take it so serious. My mindset was like, I'm a good driver. I'm here to show I'm a good driver, blah, blah, blah. And it didn't reflect in my driving. But another one of those mindsets is I'm here to put on a good show. And like, I'm here to, you know, make the fans like go crazy and be excited. And they both get you to drive your best and potentially, you know, go to the finals and stuff. And it took me a while to realize that the super serious competitive mindset is not the one I need to be in. I need to be in the, I'm here to have fun. I'm here to put on the best show I can. The best show means closest tandems, best lead runs. Like, it's all the same results. I just needed to find the right way to get there.
Yo, it's interesting. It's like I have heard, like, you know, in conversations with Literal, so kind of ironically, I've heard, you know, he's been one of those guys that I think shares that thought process all the way through. He's really focused on giving the fans the best show he can. He really knows that he's an entertainer and a sport, you know, and an athlete, right?
Right.
And Ryan, and that was always like a very interesting thing that when you hear somebody that has that many years in say, look, I know that no matter what I do, it's for the show, it's for the fans. Yeah. But it's the first time that I've ever seen anybody compare it to their success and their mental outlook. And I think it's an interesting point you brought, like, because I've heard people say, like, you know, when I really, you know, loosened up and just tried to have fun out there, I did better. And you understand, but like with you, when you explain it of, I'm really focused on just put on a good show. Right. It almost keeps it at that level, but it also says like, hey, look, it's not about the win or the loss. It's like how I go down and just absolutely shred.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. There's you can give it 100% a bunch of different ways. So as long as you're giving it 100% from the right direction, like, cool.
Yeah. Do you have any specific goals for this season? Like, I know that sounds weird. I don't necessarily expect you to have like, oh, I want to be on the podium. I don't want to be rookie of the year. You may have those. I'm just saying like, there's always like, I think when you do a craft or you have a sport that you have done for a number of years and you're kind of continuously working on certain skills and different things, there seems to be this like internal goal or checklist that sometimes people are trying to achieve. Do you have any of those?
No, and I'm kind of trying to stop myself from having those. I mean, we have like an aspiration of, yeah, I'd love rookie of the year.
Right.
I think that would be the one thing I'd call a goal. But really my only goal, especially it being the first year, is to drive my best every event. And that's the only goal. Cause otherwise you get burnt out and it starts to be not fun when it's a very slippery slope of, you know, I'm here to drive my best. And then you're like, you get upset because you blew an outer zone and went into the wall or something like that. And then you get mad at yourself for not driving your best. And then you're mad and you're pissed off. So you start driving worse because of that. And it just stumbles over itself and goes downhill fast. So my goal is just to drive the best I can all season and then see where that stacks us up. And then going into next year, we can kind of be like, okay, well, where the car needs to be a little faster, or you need to be a little faster, or, you know, we're going into a whole new world and, you know, you're going in blind anyway. So why add little things to shoot for and stuff? Just go in, do your best, see where you need to improve and stuff for next year and go from there.
Yeah. This is dope outlook.
100%. So I wanted to ask this just because I wanted to, you know, a lot of people don't know that this is actually the first time we're meeting. all three of us, right?
Face to face, yeah.
Face to face, at least. Yeah.
Just so, phone calls, emails.
Yeah. So we're literally just going into a conversation. But one of the things I wanted to do is know you a little bit better. Now, obviously, you're a pro drifter. What are some other things that Dan Stuckey does on the side when it's like when he's not on the track? Just curious to know, besides shredding on hills and stuff like that. You know what I mean?
Yeah. No, I like to travel, which most of our travel is through FD. So when we get to places and once the car is all ready and stuff like that, we like to scoot around and go find restaurants or cool little places to hang out and stuff like that. I like cooking. I like ripping my Can-Am and stuff and, I don't know, hanging out. I really like just hanging out, relaxing.
So here's a thing. My girlfriend, she's from the mountains. So maybe the first time I actually went to snowboard was, I think, a few months ago.
Sick.
And what I'm talking about, I couldn't even balance myself long enough to I don't know how. I'm the type of person where I want to go try it again and get on it. But the fact that anybody can even do that remotely with some serious Have you seen the Olympics? The dudes are flipping, dude.
I think we have completely – the way you just went right to the Olympics, I think you have completely different bars. Here's the thing, man. I am larger than the average bear, and I have went snowboarding once, and I will tell you that that was the only time I will ever go snowboarding because I have the size of my rear end was completely covered by black and blue. I didn't think it was possible. That's not me. I can't.
And that's why I moved on to Colorado.
Right.
Because it's rough on you. My knees, I wanted to do it forever. My knees and my back were like, bro, you need to chill out.
Yeah.
I'm that type of person though. I like extreme things myself. You know, and when I try that, it makes me want to continue to keep doing it. So
yeah.
Like I like extreme things too. Like the one chip challenge, things that are spicy. I don't mind.
All you can eat 72-ounce steak at Big Texas.
See, that's not me. But you get me on the wing thing, and I probably could pull some yardage. But I don't know. I think that it's cool to have hobbies, but Jesus, I know.
My knees are already bad.
And that's a mindset that changes later on in life for sure.
Right.
I learned when I was a kid and I was made of rubber. I used to, learning in Minnesota, we didn't have snow. We just had ice hills basically.
Oh.
And you're throwing yourself 30, 40, some 50 feet off this jump and bam, straight to your back, straight to
Scorpion.
Your knee. Concussion after concussion. And I was 10 to 13 years old or whatever. And I was just I get up and I do it again. And it's one of those things you have to learn because you're going to fall no matter what, whether you're trying to be extreme or whether you're just trying to cruise down the hill, you're going to fall. So when you learn it, when you're still made of rubber is a key to the sport, I think. But
so, and this is a little fun fact. So I know more than anything. I do competition breaking, break dancing.
Oh, sick. Okay.
Yeah. So it's that's why I love things like snowboarding, just because it kind of, to me, is similar. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I can see that for sure. Yeah.
But anyways, just wanted to throw that out there. I don't know why.
Yeah, you did. No, it was good.
that was super random.
it was really good. So I don't know. I'm trying to find a good point to wrap up on. You know what I mean? I feel like we've gotten to know Dan. I really hope that so much of what we do is we try to look for relationships. And that's even why early on in some of these things, when we're talking to Casey, we get a lot of proposals. We get a lot of people that are, they may be looking for things. Sometimes they match up, sometimes they don't. But we sponsor so many drivers, over the course of the last, 20, 30 years that we've kind of gotten into this thing where it's so much more important for us to have a driver that we feel like we can grow with and we can be on for a long time. So we really try to get as much as we can information wise out of them to try to feel out what are they like? Are they going to be cool? We try not to really go down the realm of doing 1 year and then we know they're going to bounce or they're only in it because they need something right now, but then they're not going to need it later. And we've turned down plenty of this stuff and it's always hard to do that. And I remember Luis knows, obviously, he's been here for almost 6 years now. So he knows that we're so conditioned for that. And right. he came in and he said, hey, look, I just spoke to Casey Cole. Do you know who he is? I said, yes, I think so. And he said, yeah, from like MSpec. I'm like, that makes sense. Yeah, yeah, I know what you're talking about. And so he said, listen, they're running this program. They're putting this thing together. And he leads in with, I'm telling you, I think we should work with them. Like they're, well, they sound like they're really good people. And that was like,
I think Dan, you can attest to this. When you talk to Casey, Casey's one of the most kindest people that you can talk to, easy to work with, willing to, yeah, you know, to just kind of like, you could just tell he's a good dude, you know. And
right.
When
unless he's listening right now, then he's not. No, he is. Yeah.
Yeah, no, he gives off good energy. And when he mentioned that you were coming on, to me, like, I already knew who you were, so I was excited about it. And yeah, man, I'm just happy to I already told you this before, but I'm excited to work with you guys. And you know, off the gate, you come in hot, that even makes it better. But that doesn't, besides yeah. that, you know, at the end of the day, yeah, we're still rolling with you, man.
I appreciate it. No, that's definitely something that I've kind of learned, especially going into this year, is my viewpoint on sponsorships and stuff has always been like, this is a business transaction. I'm providing this and you're providing this. And to, you know, to an extent it is, but I'm really learning that it's more like dating. You can't just go yeah. in and like, okay, marriage, let's talk on a first date. And they're like, no, what the? So it is, it's definitely important to work your way up to it and feel the people out at the company and not just assume you know what the company wants. And
yeah. And it's hard, you know, like, you know, from our side of it, right? Like we're car guys. Like we're, you know, we wish that we can just hook everybody up, do everything. Right. But the problem is, right, you know, you get so many of these things, and we've, you know, and we've been doing this like this is 40 years this year. So like we have had a history. I've been here for 16, but like even some of the stories before then, like we were on Ken Gucci's car, like back when he drove a Mustang, you know what I mean? Like in 2004 or five, like, so we've been with some really big, drivers, and sometimes it works and other times it doesn't. And so we've kind of gotten into the thing where we realize that like, hey, if it's just about like, they're with us only because we can offer them X amount, that's probably not our go-to. And so for all the people we deal with in pro spec or pro, you know, whatever we do for them at different levels, just like you said, like we've come to earn it together. Like we've built this bond where they know that like, there is nothing that's going to happen where we don't have their back.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Right.
And we only have X amount of abilities and spots and budgets, but we make sure like we won't roll people in new, even if it's like the best, you know, visual look to everybody else, if like we're still committed to these people regardless, you know.
Right.
Basically what he's trying to say is, you know, we're gonna cut, you know, you ever have beef, give me a call, bro.
Oh,
we got Koenig in our corner now,
right?
You know,
yeah,
I mean?
So like, yeah, so we'll send Luis out there. I'm gonna be busy snowboarding. But listen, I appreciate you jumping on this thing. I mean, I know it's probably super awkward. You don't know what you're gonna get because, like I said, it's the first time we've had that face to face.
Yeah,
but
this is my first podcast ever. So
well, congratulations, welcome.
Yeah, thank you.
There's probably 12 people here. They're gonna be really excited to listen in. But. Look, I don't, yeah. Yeah, the podcast thing is like, we've been doing it for a couple of years. It's like a hit or miss thing, right? Like we just did it just for the sake of, we have all these relationships that we build up, and we just want to be able to like let people put a catalog out there of people talking about different things that they're doing and expose them. So, you know, I don't know. It's a super laid back thing, but I appreciate you coming on here and spending some time with us. It was rad getting to speak to you in person, and I can't wait till get out to. I know we're gonna try to get out to New Jersey. What up?
I was reading my phone because I thought there was some questions. He was saying that, but it's all just shout outs. Like, yo, Stukey's a man.
Yeah, well,
Stukey should get like just married on his car, like things like this.
So oh yeah.
Oh, sure. That's a good idea for Atlanta.
Yeah, you're gonna do some just married donuts.
Yeah.
Dude, I wish. Sure. I wanted to. That was the plan originally, but we're getting married in Minnesota, where I'm from.
So the car won't be there.
Damn. Yeah. Oh. Maybe I'll Bro, if Austin, I don't know if Austin Matt is watching, but hey, buddy, I might need to borrow your drift car.
Yeah, let's get something. Wait. Your wedding's going to be where? Minnesota?
Yep, yeah.
Hold on. Alec Robbins is from Minnesota.
Oh, yeah, he is. He's a little farther up north, but he's in the next.
We got to get him to bring the car down for the wedding.
That'd be tight.
Yeah.
Maybe I'll I don't know if Kevin would like it, but maybe I'll put some pop can streamers off S14 coming down the hill.
Yeah. That's awesome. Oh, well, man.
By the way, I have to let you know that Matt and Casey both said, "Oh, we are listening" from your previous thing.
Right. So
he is awesome. I told you.
Right.
See?
Right.
So yeah. Holding down his boy.
And he's about to call him trash. Right?
Yeah.
All right. Yeah, man. Oh, man. All right. Listen, is there anything that you would like to shout out as long as you're on here? I mean, listen, I don't know how big the platform is, but it's yours to do with what you wish.
Well, obviously, you guys, all the rest
of
the sponsors and everything, I feel like that's a necessity, but definitely since you guys are watching, even if you weren't watching, Casey and Matt, they're the ones that make the whole thing happen. Yeah. I pushed some pedals. So thank you guys.
That's awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. Listen, thank you for coming on and doing this.
Thank you, Dan.
And,
I appreciate the
man,
time.
I really hope, first off, I think from your outing of the gate, I think you're going to have a really successful career in pro. But the truth is, we're super excited to watch your journey. And I think that that's probably the most important part.
Tight. Yeah, we're here for a long time. So, I mean, even if we come out strong and whatever happens this season, we're here for a while. So.
Awesome. Dan, we'll make sure that we put
all his info's already
in
there. So.
And for those listening, make sure you check out MSpec on social media. Check out Casey Cole. They're look, these dudes are everything that you would want in car people.
Hell yeah.
Yeah.
We're just a bunch of goons.
Goons. All right, man.
All right.
I appreciate the opportunity. Later. Thank you.
Thank you.
Man. All right. Talk to you later.
Awesome. So, man, like, you know, it is, you know, they're so, it is so tough, right? Like, you don't know what you're going to get. A lot of times we have the relationships before we get here, mm-hmm. but now, like, everything we were doing was just, you know, really, that was a real natural first conversation we've had with him. So it was good, man. He had such a good performance in Long Beach.
Yeah.
It was wild. Like, yeah. It was one of those ones that, you know, like, again, like, you know, that was our first experience watching him, you know, drift outside of pro spec, you know, where mm-hmm. we had some vested interest in the sense that, you know, he's part of us now, right?
Yeah.
So, but watching it, man, I think from the moment he rolled out on his first run, it was like, all right, hold on.
Well, and I think, you know, one of the cool things that we get to experience is, first off, you know, we see him, what he does on the track and how he did on the track. Yeah. And it also translates to his attitude. He was out there just killing it and having
fun. He's fun, though.
He's a fun dude, man.
Like, I can tell, like, he's just a super fun dude.
Yeah.
Somebody like, you definitely want to grab a drink with.
And I was actually going to say that to him, you know, next time we go to an event, well, we're going to be in Jersey. Hopefully we can grab a drink with him and chop it up and talk. And
yeah.
I think that's one of my favorite things about doing this, man, that I get to meet people like him and people like Kelsey and Hooman, who are just great people, man. You got to love it, man. And thank you for that. Thank you, Koenig. Mr. Koenig,
I'm just here for the laughs, you know what I mean? So anyhow, listen, that's about it. We're gonna get out of here. I'm gonna go do some work. We're gonna try to do this whole wheel thing. Stay tuned in the next week or so. We're gonna be dropping the new wheels. It's happening. Mm. We're there. So we're gonna be dropping the new wheels. So stay tuned for a podcast coming up soon about that.
Yep.
Also, we drop a piece of content this coming Friday.
Yep.
I'm not sure what it is, but it doesn't even matter.
It's FAQ for just change my wheel entire package, something to that effect. I'm not sure. Yeah,
we try to make them humorous. So even if you think the title sucks,
just wanted to say, Gunners, I'm going to be visiting our homeboy very soon.
You don't give it up.
I'm not going to tell him what we're doing. We're not going to tell him what we're doing. We're just something's coming for the Gunners. Just I know they're here sometimes. I saw there was a Gunner in there, so I just
listen.
Had to throw
we
out
appreciate
there.
The Gunner Nation. I'm just saying. but anyhow, listen. Take care of yourself. Have a good week. We will be back here next week, Wednesday, 3 p.m. Eastern.
Boy.
Take care of yourself.
Peace.